Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Claps for the ball and looks to throw. Pressure
ball,
behind,
ball out. Comes out, it's loose behind the play. Junior Tuiaalamaka has the football.
On the field.
Notre Dame takes over inside the red zone. RJ Oben blows it up, and the Irish are in business.
Notre Dame Radio Network set up a touchdown right before the end of the first half, and then Notre Dame would come out of the second half and have a kick return for a touchdown. It was a great win by the Irish last night to beat Georgia. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, and we're asking a couple questions about Notre Dame today. Number one is, can they win the national title?
Nope.
So this is the high point of the season.
No, they'll probably be Penn State, but I mean, you and I could coach the team and beat James Franklin in the Final Four.
You know, I'm wondering if James Franklin, obviously this is his moment, and I've never been a believer before, but, and this is still a Notre Dame conversation, but just for quickly on Penn State, they've beaten their opponents as good as you can beat them, right? I mean, it's not their fault this lucky draw.
So Indiana beat their opponents this year as good as they could beat them, then they didn't do anything in the playoff.
No, but since we got to the playoff, what has Penn State done? They've won two games. They've won these games convincingly. I think these games are considered big games.
I don't. I think, in fact, we could do a poll on that. Like, has James Franklin proven that he can win the big game?
Yeah.
He beat SMU and Boise.
You're making me uncomfortable. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Like, I'm sorry, that's
beat
not...
Beat them convincingly.
Beat Ohio State. Beat Texas. Beat Notre Dame.
Well, we're going to see. That's going to be one of the national semifinals, and it's going to be a lot of fun down in the Orange Bowl. We're also asking you another question. Is Notre Dame likable now? Because Notre Dame has been one of those polarizing programs. You either love them or you love to root against them, and now with Marcus Freeman and maybe the fact that we're going up against an SEC juggernaut and the winner of the SEC this year in Georgia, kind of felt like more people were rooting for Notre Dame than we usually see.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. This is a very different Notre Dame program than what, like the Lou Holtz program, or even before that, the one that was in Rudy with, I think Dan Devine was the coach. Like that was the powerhouse that, you know, they were Georgia basically for a long time. And now they're the sort of, they got like a bit of an ACC vibe to me. Like they're, you know, they play Navy, they play Army. Like they feel like the little guy that could in some ways, even though they are obviously the most iconic program, the gold helmet and everything. They definitely felt like the underdog as far as programs go. That being said, that wasn't like a real Georgia team. So I'm not sure that had to, if they had played Georgia 2 years ago, like this Georgia team, was that a powerhouse like we saw last night? I think everybody was down on Georgia.
You know, this Georgia team was just flawed. There was something about this team, and we can go through exactly what it was. I mean, something about this team, though, that never felt right all year, whether it was Carson Beck and his problem with turning the ball over, that to his credit, he did clean up like around midway through the season. You know, you had ATN, who was hurt for a lot of the year, was suspended, then he was hurt. Never felt like the run game was really going, even though Kirby Smart would always say he's the best player on our offense. You know, you didn't have your Brock Bowers like you usually. I didn't have your Ladd McConkey, so you had guys dropping passes. That happened last night as well. They said on the broadcast that, you know, no team dropped more passes than Georgia all season long.
That is the weirdest thing. Like, their receivers have fallen off tremendously.
And then you were able to run on them a little bit on the edges, especially last night. It felt like when Notre Dame really needed to get a first down, they were able to. And they played a very straight-up game. You know, Notre Dame got the kick return for a touchdown, as we said. But they weren't doing trick plays. I guess the one special teams where they substituted 11 guys for 11 and they got Georgia to jump off sides. But beyond that, I thought they played them pretty straight up.
I kind of disagree with that. Like, I feel like they used a strategy like, all we're going to do is run our quarterback. And that throws teams off. Like, look what happened. That was how Vanderbilt beat Alabama, right? Like, a lesser team can beat a better team with a running quarterback.
Yeah, like a Haynes King. You love to bring up how Georgia
they,
Tech
they Haynes
went
King'd.
To eight overtime.
Like, if you didn't have Riley Leonard running last night, they wouldn't have done anything, and they really didn't do anything offensively all game.
Well,
they
that's
had
a credit to the coaching staff, because they realized where the listen. It's
it
a
feels
credit.
It feels like a trick to me.
What?
Having a quarterback run game. It feels like...
But they've been doing that all year, right, Leonard? That's who he is. He was that guy at Duke, too.
Yeah, but the question is, okay, they're coming up against Penn State, who's a step up. Well, not really a step up for Georgia, but like I was wondering, like, why isn't Georgia spying? Like, why is it everybody focused on Riley Leonard? There's nothing else. They have no pass game. The running backs are having a bit of an off night. Like, just like, obviously Riley Leonard's going to run here. So they kept on getting seven-yard runs on first down. Maybe if they had focused on him, he would have had more of a passing game. But it felt like, oh, God, we got them. We have honed it down to where they only have one option against us, and that's their quarterback run. But the truth is, like, they didn't really get any offense going until the end. The special teams killed them, and that the play we started the show with right here, that fumble, like, yeah. You got to be careful at the end of a half. Like, that is one, you know, as Tom Brady always said, that's where you win and lose games, at the very end of the half, in the beginning of the third quarter. Like, and the funny thing is, I had a feeling, I'm like, Georgia's probably going to get aggressive here, and they're going to screw this up, because they have an unproven quarterback, and he did not feel the pressure. That was a terrible, terrible mistake. I think that play did more than anything to decide the game, the fumble at the end of the second quarter.
It definitely put some pressure on Georgia, for sure. And I think it was actually the kick return for the touchdown to start the second half, because you thought, all right, it's still Georgia, right? What are they going to come out? What are they going to do? How are they going to be? They've had all these comeback wins all year long. They've been living on comeback wins. Is this just going to be another example of it? And then you start off the second half with Notre Dame having a kick return for a touchdown. It's like, I don't know if this comeback's happening. Now, fair to them, they made it 20-10.
Well, they made it 20-10 easily. Like, that was the easiest touchdown drive I've ever seen. I'm like, where has that been? And then they got the ball at midfield because Notre Dame missed their fourth down.
Yep.
Then they got down into the red zone, and they, you know, this game was actually all about the fourth downs, and Georgia screwed up two of them in a big way and lost. They could have made it 20-17 there, and then we have a full game.
Midway through the third quarter.
Yeah, then Notre Dame at the end, because of Riley Leonard running, was able to stranglehold the clock.
Yep.
It was a strange game. It obviously was not. It was not fireworks offensively. You and I said that coming in, that we knew it was going to be a bit of a battle.
And I think the next round's going to be the same way.
I totally agree. Penn State and Notre Dame are both really, really good defensive players. Penn State, the job that Penn State did on Ashton Jeanty, expect them to apply that kind of pressure to Riley Leonard next week.
Yeah. Whether
or not Abdul Carter's not there. So they're going to force Notre Dame to do something they don't want to do, which is open up their passing game. Can they do it? And then the same thing, like, Notre Dame's defense should have a heyday against Penn State. I know Drew Aller is like the hot guy right now. I think he's going to run into a wall against Notre Dame.
I think it's more about the Penn State running backs, who have been really good. But we asked a question at Maggie and Pearl on Twitter, X, whatever. Is Notre Dame football now likable? 59% of you are saying yes. Big switch. Kevin is in Oregon, has a thought on it. Kevin, Notre Dame now likable to you?
Well, no, they never have been, ever since they had Lou Holtz as their head coach. There's something so disturbing about him that they can't rub it off no matter what they do. I like the guy they've got now, but I can't like the team.
You know, Kevin, it's fair. Lou Holtz still out there sparring with Ryan Day. Remember that? And Ryan Day... Was that last season? He's like, tell Lou Holtz.
I believe that was last season, yes. Yeah. But we need an Ohio State-Notre Dame championship so we can just get that beef back going.
Isn't Lou Holtz like in a rocking chair in Florida somewhere?
I think he's heavily involved in the election.
In politics, yeah. I know. But I'm striking. He be in a rocking chair in Florida somewhere?
He will leave that rocking chair and find a microphone to talk smack to Ryan Day if Notre Dame beats him in a national championship game.
He's 87.
God bless. Lou Holtz is the funniest coach of all time. A, the voice. B, like the things that he would say about the bad opponents was just so comical. Oh my God. He's like, well, you know, I can't do his voice, but Mercer's passing attack, watch out for them. And it'd be like 63-3 at halftime. He was one of the funniest coaches of all time.
Don't you guys notice something here? Perloff will attempt any impression under the sun. Yeah. But now with Lou Holtz, we can't get a little more. He's got a little more like Donald Duck in there.
Oh, yeah. Dan Patrick does it so good. Like, that's his number one go-to. Lou Holtz. Oh, yeah. We put their pants on the same way they do or something. You know, what's his famous line? They put their, what is it line? Give me the line. They put their pants on the same way we do. Dan walks around the studio. because remember when back in the 90s, like Lou Holtz was the guy. Like he was probably the biggest face of college football. And he would just say the wildest things at his press conferences.
Yeah, I mean, no, this is perfect for when Dan's doing SportsCenter back on those late nights.
Yeah. We put the I'll get the line. Actually, I'm gonna find a clip of Dan doing Lou Holtz. You guys will crack up. It is so funny. Sounds nice.
I'm here for it. Okay. So you can.
What are you talking about? We have to a boot.
So many. Okay. You can weigh in. Is Notre Dame become likable? I got a little bit of a beef with the broadcast last night. Okay. So they did a fine job. But there was an incident where a guy who was in uniform on the Georgia sideline, but not suited up for the game. His name is Parker Jones, and he became infamous last night because in the longest play, the longest gain of the game, early in the second quarter, Gunnar Stockton finds Arian Smith for a 67-yard pass, okay? This is the thing that Georgia, this is the play they needed to try to get the offense going. So as Smith is just racing down the sideline, the referee is racing down the sideline trying to keep up with him to see where he would spot the ball when Smith goes out of bounds eventually, right? So what happens is this kid, Parker Jones, again, who's like a walk-on, was also celebrating. He got into the lane of the referee. Here's what it sounded like on TV.
Arian Smith behind the defender. He is one of the fastest men in college football, and they caught him.
And let's look as the official running down, and number 39 runs right into the official, which slows him down. That's who ultimately calls the penalty. You have to stay out of that white part. That is the official's area. They own that white part of the sideline.
You've got one job, dude. Yeah. It's to not interfere with anything going on in the game when you are not playing in this game. So it didn't wipe out the whole play, but it did flag them for a 15-yard penalty, and it backed Georgia up to the 26-yard line. They wound up kicking a field goal in a game that they lost 23-10. I mean, Georgia needed offense so badly last night, and this guy, Parker Jones, cost him 15 yards, and he's in sweatpants on the side with a jersey. He's a walk-on from Georgia.
Unbelievable.
Here's why I have beef with the broadcast. This happened in the second quarter, okay? And they put the camera on him, and social media blows up, and everyone's making fun of this guy and how he is going to have to transfer at halftime, and he's going to get beat up, and his own teammates are going to hate him and all that stuff. At the end of the game, when Parker Jones has been just a memory, okay? Georgia's getting beat soundly by Notre Dame. Notre Dame won that game. It was not a fluke. The camera puts Parker Jones's face back on your TV screen. Just to rehash, Perloff, what happened in the second quarter. He is not the reason why they lost the game, and I felt like they scapegoated him or attempted to at the end of the broadcast by putting this dude's mug back on camera.
Ooh, I don't know.
There was no reason to show him at that point.
Yeah, it was a big part of the game. I, you're right, they didn't lose just because of him, but that was part of the reason they lost.
But even if you're retelling the game, the fumbles, the missed fourth down opportunities. I mean, there were guys who actually played in this game who didn't play up to the standard. The false start penalty when they're trying to drive. I mean, all the things that went wrong for Georgia. Yeah, this guy was one of them. But he's not the only reason they lost. And I thought to go back to him at the end of the game and put him on camera for how many people do you think watched that game last night? 35 million? 40?
I don't know. No, that's a big number. Okay. I don't think that happens for college.
20, probably.
20, yeah, it's Notre Dame.
Yeah, 20, 25, I can see.
Yeah, you're telling me Georgia's got this massive footprint fan base, and Notre Dame, I mean, a lot of people have watched that game, and it was a standalone.
Yeah, I mean, like, even the biggest, like the Alabama Georgias get like 18 or 19, so I this probably might have gotten that, but...
Okay.
Well, anyway, regardless, that 40 million are not watching this game.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of disagree with you, though, about, like, Yes, the impact was huge. Like, I think you put that there with any of those other plays, right? Or I know it was early, but
okay.
Still.
I'm telling you, yeah. You can't tell. I get it. 15-yard penalty.
What else are you going to show? Are you going to show Gunnar Stockton, like, or are you going to show the whole punt return team like getting screwed up? Like, I don't know. I think he was a storyline of the game. That was kind of appropriate. Did you guys have? I'm surprised you have such a big problem with it.
He's 5'11", 190-pound, redshirt sophomore who has recorded no stats. And guess what? He's a cornerback. Like, this dude's never seen the field.
Right.
Ever.
I couldn't believe that guy was a cornerback, but they showed him on camera. Yeah, when he said that he's a redshirt, he's a walk-on cornerback, I'm like, excuse me? No, I thought he was a long snapper or something.
I thought he was a backup kicker.
Yes. The audience is picking up what we're putting down here. This dude didn't look like he's not getting on the field, okay? And he's not at the top five reasons why Georgia lost this game, he is not one of the top five reasons they lost the game. He's not.
Well, where do you...
A 15-yard penalty in the second quarter, it didn't wipe out the play. You're at the 26-yard line with a first down. Go score.
Yeah.
Go score. And they couldn't do it. So they kicked a field goal. They couldn't score a touchdown.
He's close to the top five. I mean, it was a big play.
I don't know how many polls we're putting up today, but... I'm just wondering, there's another part of this. Is this... They mentioned Greg McElroy compared him to Bartman. On the broadcast. Now, yeah. I get it. He wasn't dressed for the game. He's not a fan, though. He's actually on the sideline. He is a member of the team. He just wasn't, you know, in uniform.
I mean, he kind of was dressed like a fan, right? He wore a jersey with no pads and sweatpants. That's kind of what most of the fans in the Georgia student section was wearing. Yeah.
With the long sleeves underneath when apparently it was 100 degrees in the Superdome.
Yeah, what the hell was that about? I don't know.
But anyway.
It's even like, it was such a weird game. Like, what are the top five reasons? Like, why did Georgia lose this game? I'm not saying, like, it's not, it's not easy to figure out what the top five reasons are. I don't even know what happened to Georgia last night. Like, why did their
Notre Dame's defense got up in their, you know what, faces?
Or was it their offense was non-functional? Like,
drops?
Yeah, I mean, the drops were crazy.
Down?
Like, I can't tell if that was Georgia screwed the pooch or Notre Dame was just so good or the whole game was just like everybody was rusty because of the Georgia rest. I don't even know what happened to Georgia there. Like, honestly, if I'm walking away from that game, I might as well blame the walk-on because I'm not exactly sure. Like, where did you lose that game? Like, you definitely should have been more careful at the end of the half, and you definitely, your special teams just got your butts kicked. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Kirby's chewing a lot of people out about the special teams, but I don't even know how Georgia lost because they outgained. For most of the game, they were outgaining Notre Dame like 3-1. Like, Notre Dame didn't do anything, and they still had a double-digit lead for a huge chunk of the game.
There's a lot of reasons why Georgia lost this game. Kirby Smart said we're undisciplined, couldn't execute, couldn't take advantage of gift opportunities at times that Notre Dame gave them. 100 reasons why they lost the game.
You had a good one, too. They just didn't run the ball effectively, which is a big deal.
Yeah, and I think Trevor Etienne is hurt. And so the other part, and their offensive line I don't think was as good as normally is. And they committed bad penalties, the offensive line. Yeah. These are all guys who are going to be in the NFL. Anyway, I just wonder, is this dude Parker Jones, like, is this the last we've heard of him, or is he Bartman, Jeffrey Mayer? Those are two baseball examples. The other, remember when Mike Tomlin tripped Jacoby Jones?
Yeah, Jacoby Jones, and I remember that crazy guy that was on the Jets coaching staff.
Sal Alossi.
Yeah. Sal Alossi.
He's closer to that guy. Yeah. Not Tomlin's fine.
You more of a Sal Alossi, a Rex Ryan acolyte who tripped a Patriots player on a special teams play.
He was a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah.
And then I think there's a PS to that guy. I think, and this story has not aged well, I think he was working at UCLA and may have gotten into an altercation with Diddy's son or Diddy. Can you double check me on that?
You sure it wasn't Snoop Dogg's son? I thought Snoop Dogg played for you. I thought his son played at UCLA. He
could have been, but I think Sal Alossi got into it with a rapper's son.
By the way, can I defend Parker a little bit?
Go. I mean, if you
as crazy as it may sound, I do feel like he is a walk-on, and what these coaches will tell these guys who don't get any playing time or the guys who are walk-ons, hey, you're on this team basically to be glorified cheerleaders. Like, if you're not going to be playing, you're not going to be dressed, like, you better be invested in the game, active, rooting hard. Like, they're supposed to be kind of what Parker Jones was doing. Did he take it a little too far? Obviously, yes, he did. But I also feel like the ref, you could have you could have gave them a warning. Did you have to throw a 15-yard penalty? It wasn't like Parker Jones gave him a freaking Ray Lewis forearm shiver to the chest. Like, the guy acted like he got killed. Like, I feel bad for the kid. Because I know he was told before the game, hey, you guys, all you walk-ons, you better be investing in this game. Yeah. We're going to need all 75 of us to win. That includes the guys on the sidelines. And he tried his best, and now it hurt his team, and now everybody's calling him Bartman.
That's a great defense. Oh, my God. EJ just totally changed my mind.
Thank you.
He's like the Monmouth bench. Or what's that bench at college basketball?
Yeah, exactly.
Monmouth
or Gonzaga. I know our guys always are going crazy. Like, those guys are, that's why they're on the team.
I'm now convinced he's the only reason Georgia was able to stay in the game as long as they could because of the energy coming from that walk-on.
You know, EJ, nice defense.
And actually, the only counter is how bad that kid's haircut was. Like, that was like the SEC frat boy haircut that annoys everybody.
Insufferable. But the other part is, you're right, but you've got a whole sideline. The only place you can't go is, what, 4 feet in the white?
He took it too far. I get it. He took it too far. But this is the Sugar Bowl. Yeah. It's a big game. It's a playoff. It's the biggest play of the game. There weren't many exciting plays in this game, for Georgia especially. And he got caught. But I know those coaches told all those bench guys, all those walk-ons, hey, you better be up on the sidelines. You better be hyped, getting the crowd hyped. Yeah. He was trying to do his job. He just took it too far.
Did that Jets guy, by the way, he had, like, his players form a wall. Like, he was, like, intentionally trying to interfere with plays on a consistent basis, as I remember.
Repeat offender. He was like Danny looked that, it up. I was right. Sal Alossi was a strength and conditioning coach for the Jets. And what was it, Manny?
Sean Diddy Combs, whose son Justin Combs is a reserve on the defensive back with the Bruins. Yeah, he got into an altercation. So Diddy got into an altercation with Alossi because of the treatment of his son, Justin.
Sal Alossi is a very brave man to be getting into any altercations with Diddy. That guy blows up cars.
Have you seen Sal since? Can someone check on this guy?
Well, that's true, too.
I said the story didn't age well. I feel like I did preface this by saying the story didn't age well. But, yeah. Does Parker Jones now, the walk-on who interfered with the biggest offensive play of the game for Georgia, does he go down in infamy? Or is he forgotten? 855-212-4227. Coming up, got a little breaking news for you from the coaching ranks. We'll get to that in a minute. It's MVP.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. All right, Maggie, you teased some coaching news. Lay it on us.
It looks like today, according to Zach Rosenblatt, the New York Jets will interview Mike Vrabel at their facility. And Vrabel's obviously the hottest coaching candidate on the available, right? Besides Ben Johnson,
yeah, now
maybe?
That Belichick's in North Carolina. Ben Johnson, yeah, you could say Ben Johnson, but Vrabel certainly is going to be in demand.
No doubt. So Mike Vrabel is going to be at the Jets facility today doing an interview. And I asked Perla from the break, do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing for Aaron Rodgers? Does this mean he's more likely to come back or not come back? And you said they're actually very good friends.
Well, yeah, they had a dust-up. Actually, I totally remember this. The Packers were playing the Titans, and Rodgers was talking trash to him in the middle of the game. And afterwards, on the McAfee show, he said that they got in a little bit of a standoff there. But they're very good friends. They talk all season long.
Interesting. See,
because Vrabel's obviously very close to A.J. Hawk, both Ohio State guys. And Rodgers' best friend is A.J. Hawk. So I assume there's a group there. I'm sure they socialize.
Yeah, it's funny because on the surface, I actually don't put Rodgers and Vrabel. They don't look like two guys who would get a beer to me. Because Rodgers, well, maybe just because I watch his, I can't call it a documentary. I watched the movie about Aaron Rodgers. He's very, like, you know, woo-woo.
Yeah, but that's new Aaron Rodgers.
Right,
like,
exactly.
He was a get-a-beer-with-a-lineman guy for a big chunk of his career. Yeah.
But right now, we're right now Aaron Rodgers, where there's a question. Who knows what he's like behind the scenes? But at least what he's putting out publicly is that, hey, listen, everything's got a silver lining, and like whether we win or lose, it was really just about the friends we made along the way. Like that's the, and I don't think Mike Vrabel's like that at all. Now get a beer together, sure. Obviously they have tons in common, but I just don't see them as two guys who would click. I think the egos would be pretty big. I think Mike Vrabel's probably looking at Tennessee thinking, you guys got rid of me. You made a massive mistake. Your general manager thought Will Levis was going to be the future. That guy's got to go. You know, I'm not going to be second fiddle and second banana to a GM or to a quarterback, quite frankly. So I wonder if Vrabel feels like he's earned, or maybe with this opportunity, he's going to ask for a little bit more power. I don't know, but he certainly feels like he's in the driver's seat with some of these interviews.
Well, I think Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, probably wants to get rid of Rodgers. There's clearly some kind of tension going on there. I know Chris Johnson, the brother, gets along well. So I think the Jets want to get rid of Rodgers anyway. But personality-wise, I know you're saying about the ayahuasca Aaron Rodgers, but think about, like, Aaron Rodgers gets along beautifully with Pat McAfee.
Right.
And I feel like Vrabel is in the same lane. Remember that draft where Vrabel had all that funny stuff going on? Like,
yeah, someone literally sitting on the toilet with the door open.
I just feel like they're both
knucklehead kids.
I know Rodgers all about New Age medicine, but there's a lot of NFL bro in him. Like look at his friends through the years. He definitely, like, Vrabel, McAfee, Rodgers, like, those guys probably all get along. I don't think a coach is going to come in there and want this unsettled situation where they're Rodgers for maybe one more season. You would probably want to build something from the ground up. You'd probably want a rookie quarterback or something. I'm not exactly sure where this Jets quarterback magically comes from if it's not Aaron Rodgers.
It feels like they're hoping one just materializes out of thin air.
Is it a free agent? They can't bring Sam Darnold back. I have no idea, you know, theoretically. Maybe
Cousins?
A draft guy? I mean, yeah.
Cousins already
another Achilles
once,
guy?
But, and Kirk Cousins played them.
Does Vrabel want Kirk
pretty
Cousins?
Pretty hard a couple years ago. Yeah. He actually took less money to go to the Vikings.
Like, you bring up a good question. Vrabel wants to be the man. Like, does that mean, like, I bring Ryan Tannehill in? I don't even know what this looks like.
Tannehill? He's not a milk carton. Where's that?
Yuck.
I think he's all but retired, right? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where this quarterback comes from.
He is 5 years younger than Aaron Rodgers.
Well, that's not a shock.
Yeah, he's 36. But I honestly, like, you laugh. I'm sure that he could be a second string of backup there.
Carson Wentz? I don't know.
Oh, geez. Let's go. Jets fans,
buckle up.
Buckle up. I mean, maybe
one good news that Vrabel was going to be here. Now you're telling me Tannehill or the other guy?
Carson Wentz?
I mean, maybe one of the quarterbacks falls to you. Maybe it's Jalen Milroe.
Crap is crap.
It is. I have them as number 7 draft pick on Tankathon. Maybe you get a rookie out of that. So it's like Vrabel's coming into what exactly is my point?
Well, I'm not saying he's taking this job, by the way. All I gave you was the news is that he's interviewing for it. And the other part is, this is so very Jets to be interviewing the general managers and the head coaches at the same time. They do this. It's a ridiculous thing because now you have two guys who are not hired together. One guy didn't hire the other guy. They both report to the owner, who we know is a wild card. So I wonder if Brick and Jack, the two sons of Woody Johnson, also get to sit in on the interview and ask a couple questions.
Well, I don't think Madden has ratings on coaches, so I hope to God they're not.
Did you see last night, all of social media was putting Marcus Freeman on the Jets sideline? I'm like, dude, don't do that, Marcus.
Why in hell would he do that?
I don't know. It's like he's now the hot NFL name, too.
I don't understand that, by the way.
I mean, he's obviously a very good coach, very charismatic.
I mean, before this season, he was losing to Marshall and, like, Northern Illinois. Like, I'm a big Marcus Freeman fan, but I've heard Marcus Freeman to the Bears. Like, I'm just what?
We do this all the time with college coaches.
Let him win a championship. Let's let him. I don't know. He's still a young, developing coach to me.
Let's get
to
Bogut.
He's just very, very likable.
Yeah, I get it.
No, it looks like the team, they obviously love him. Bogues has headlines for us. Bogues. I don't know if you were planning to do that Mike Vrabel thing. Sorry if I stole your thunder.
You did not. Okay. All 68,000 seats were sold, but the announced attendance at the Superdome yesterday, just over 57,000 fans. Matt Baker from The Athletic, who was on the show yesterday, said it felt neither normal nor abnormal inside the venue as New Orleans began to heal from Wednesday's terror attack. After 60 minutes of football, Notre Dame had a 23-10 win over Georgia. Irish head coach Marcus Freeman on navigating an emotional 2 days.
They had to be able to still get ready for this game with the natural emotions that come into each individual that happened after the tragedy. And so I'm proud of the way they prepared. They stayed steady, and they went out and they did a great job.
His defense led the way. Georgia had just 10 first-half rushing yards. They only converted 2 third or fourth downs, and Notre Dame had 9 tackles for loss, including a strip sack that led to ND's first touchdown just before halftime. The Irish would score 17 points over a 54-second span, bridging halftime to take a 23 lead. This is their first major bowl win since the 94 Cotton Bowl. It was not the ending that Kirby Smart wanted to a season that did not go as planned.
What they went through this year, what they played, how they played, the resiliency, the injuries that we've had, and win an SEC championship, which I have so much respect for our conference, and win some of the comeback games they won and never quit, even in this game, never quit. That's the attitude you got to have to get better as a football program.
So it'll be Notre Dame and Penn State in a semifinal in Miami next Thursday night. With their season on the line, the Bengals have T. Higgins and running back Chase Brown as questionable for tomorrow night's game with the Steelers with lower body injuries. We also get Browns Ravens tomorrow. Cleveland expected to start Bailey Zappe at QB.
Yes.
In that one.
Did you like lose a bet or something? Yeah.
Did you guys see the spread on that game?
Yes. Infinity?
I think it's 18 and a half
it's
or
20. I looked this morning.
My Lord. It's an yeah. NFL game.
And you would never, ever, anybody who bet on the Browns with Bailey Zappe be crazy, too.
I'm sorry. I zoned out for a second. You said Ohio State is playing Akron this weekend?
Seriously. And basically, yes.
I think Bailey Zappe, I'm a big Zappe fan.
Yes. What did you always say?
I'm Zappe curious in New England. I mean, you guys like Will Howard. He's the same exact person as Bailey Zappe.
No, I thought one of the best opinions you've ever had was that Bailey Zappe and Mac Jones were actually the same guy.
Oh, right. They were under the helmet. They were trying to confuse the defense.
Yeah. It was like sister-sister. What, they were twins and they just changed jerseys?
Parent trap?
Yeah.
Yeah, something I mean, like it's still Baltimore minus 20 right now. Oh, my God.
I love their, like, Robert Kraft really prefers Bailey Zappe. It's like, how can he tell? He's like 85. He's up there. You can tell Mac Jones, Bailey Zappe. I doubt it, sir.
Meanwhile, good times in Miami. The Heat took a 128-115 loss from the Pacers last night. Jimmy Butler scored just 9 points before watching the fourth quarter for the second straight game and then said this afterwards.
I want to see me get my joy back from playing basketball. And wherever that may be, we'll find out here pretty soon.
Didn't his agent tell us the trade rumors were nonsense? Butler,
what phenomenal culture.
Yeah.
There is just not
Heat
an
culture,
eye roll
baby.
Big enough for Jimmy Butler right now. But as this is so hard to take from someone who, this is not the first time he's done something like this, number one. And he did this in Minnesota. And then the other part is somebody who's just like, how dare you complain? Yet, I think Jimmy Butler will also go to another team and help them win a title.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd take him on my team.
You already had him on your team. You let him go for Tobias Harris.
Take him again.
You don't get a second shot.
He went on to say he is happy off the court in Miami. When asked if he could re-find that joy on the court in South Beach, he quickly said probably not. Speaking of the
this guy's
Sixers,
got his own barista. We're supposed to feel bad for him. Literally, someone comes to his house to make coffee.
I'm emo. Leave me alone.
The Sixers'
no sympathy.
Big three played together for a change last night in San Francisco, but the Warriors won 139-105. Steph Curry 8 for 8 from three, scoring 30.
Sheesh. We have a big three?
Well, we have three.
I've never heard us described as a big three, but I'm back.
So it's... I
know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
I would write it not capitalized B in big three.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, Embiid, Maxey, and Paul George all played.
It's more
last
like
night.
One and a half. Big one and a half.
Lamest.
It's like
big
a schmedium three.
A big three.
I think Ice Cube has more claim to a big three league than that.
Yeah, give me Joe Johnson and Sharif Abdul-Rahim.
The Sixers'
big
main three players who were often injured were all healthy at the same time last night. Is that
and
better?
They lost?
And they lost by 25.
Nice.
I'm sorry. They lost by 34. Yeah. Let me correct my math.
This is my favorite update, Bogus. More of these, please. Heat falling apart. Sixers mid-three loses again. Keep going.
Mid-three.
How about this? Pretty number good. 19, Gonzaga beat Portland last night. The Pilots, not the Blazers. 81-50. And our beloved San Jose Sharks got their first home win since November 29th, 2-1 over the Lightning. Guys, back to you. Oh, by the way, I should tell you, because I'm contractually obligated to do so, that all of that was brought to you by GoodRx. For simple, smart savings on your prescriptions, go to GoodRx.com or download the free GoodRx app. Now I'm done.
Bang! Bang!
Thank you, Mike Breen.
Kick, save, and a beaut, Bogus.
Yeah.
Well done. Coming up, I thought we heard the worst idea in sports yesterday until Perloff said, no, I love it. We do not see the same, not see this thing eye to eye. We'll get to that in just a moment. Is it the worst idea or the best idea? You be the judge next. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Notre Dame beats Georgia last night. We'll get more into that game in just a moment. Notre Dame, goes on to play Penn State. It's Texas and Ohio State in the other national semifinal. Those happen next week on Thursday and Friday. But it was funny. We saw this headline that came up, and I don't know if EJ and I were both like, oh boy, this is the worst idea we've ever heard. And Perloff, you thought it was the best idea you've ever heard. And the headline.
It's a bit of a oversell, but yeah, I like it.
This is from former general manager Mike Tannenbaum, who says a lot of things, to be fair, believe that Kirk Cousins would be a good fit with the Cleveland Browns.
Right. Why is that surprising?
If I'm Kirk Cousins, there is not enough money in the world, considering how much money he's already made in his life. There's not enough money in the world for me to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. Why would he ever want to get mixed up in that mess? And I'm talking about from the Deshaun Watson aspect of it. What's his future? They still owe him $100 million guaranteed, to the fact that it's the Browns and they've been a factory of sadness and futility for years. And I'm coming off an Achilles. I have to play in the NFC North. I can list a laundry list of things and reasons why Kirk Cousins should stay far away from this team.
Kirk Cousins was born to quarterback this team. I mean, obviously him and Stefanski have amazing chemistry. Like, that's why Stefanski got a head job, because
Vikings,
he coached him in the Vikings. They have a sick offensive line if they all get healthy, and enough talented receiver. Like, there's no Deshaun Watson. He's not even in the mix. He tore his Achilles in October. He's out. He's not coming back. So you have the team, and you're going to be better next year. Again, as my good friend Dr. Rock Positano says, Achilles is always a 2-year recovery. You need a second year to get confidence out of late. So Cousins is going to be healthy. He's going to have his coach. He's going to have receivers. He's going to have an offensive line.
But pause on that, because yes, it takes you maybe 2 years to get fully back to yourself. But Deshaun Watson is going to come back October. It's going to be a year.
And that's maybe, October. Yeah,
the season's barely started in October. The NFL season is so long.
Yeah, but Deshaun's not going to. If Cousins plays well, Deshaun's not going to be really ready to go. He's not going to have a camp. Like, you think he's going to come in midseason off an Achilles and just, like, he hasn't been able to stay healthy?
How are they going to afford both of these guys?
That I don't understand. He's going to have to do like a Russell Wilson $1 million deal, which Kirk Cousins generally does not do. But as far as like football, like, can you picture a better spot for Kirk Cousins? It's definitely better than Atlanta. Like, with an unproven offensive coordinator, this feels like this offense could work. Like, this is, I always call it the Kubiak offense, where basically Kirk Cousins is going to play action and roll right and find somebody every single day. He's got Njoku, he's got Judy, who I don't love. Like, this is going to be a good offense.
But why would it be better than what he has in Atlanta?
He's
got Drake London, and he's got Bijan Robinson. And this is the whole reason why we thought Atlanta was going to win this division, and it wasn't, you know, and
well,
they'd
just
walk away with it.
Coaching. It's Zach Robinson, right, who's the first time.
Who came from Sean McVay, who everyone was high on.
But, I mean, obviously, Kevin Stefanski and Kirk Cousins would be like a hand in glove.
Is Kevin Stefanski long for the Browns?
Like, well, he has to be there in this formula to work. Obviously, Kirk Cousins isn't coming there if they fire Kevin Stefanski.
No, I get that. And, again, this was Mike Tannenbaum who floated this out as former general manager. But I think if I'm Kirk, I'm like, all right, what other ideas you got?
I think that's the best one. There's nothing better coming. Like, he's not going to get with one of, he's not going to get Eddie Kevin O'Connell. Like, that's not happening. It's going to be a terrible bridge situation. At least this is a good spot, because I don't think Deshaun Watson is going to be healthy this year.
No one has ever said that Cleveland's a good spot in the history of Cleveland.
Oh, I disagree. Like,
you're basically
Deshaun
telling
him
to go to the Jets. I mean, to be honest, like, there's a part of Cleveland, and I think the most staunch Cleveland Brown fan would back me up on this. There's a part of it that you can put any team on paper there. You can have any, and you'll wonder, all right, how's this thing going to get messed up? Not how's this going to work?
I know, but they still had hope when Baker was there. They had a little hope. They thought when Deshaun got there that it would be like,
right,
at least
think about
hope.
It.
I understand what you're saying. Of course I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But Kirk Cousins is not going to have a lot of choices.
But think about it. They did have Baker Mayfield. They did win a playoff game with him, and then they showed him the door.
Yeah.
So, like, even when they actually had a good thing, they didn't know enough to keep the good thing. So this is why you always say bad owners. You'll never win with a bad ownership. And the Browns are bad owners.
Yeah, but it's Kirk Cousins. He's not going to have his choice of good owners. Like, the good owners already have quarterbacks. He's going to have to choose the Jets or the Browns or some team like that. And this is a place where he could put up huge numbers. He's got, you said the AFC North, their defenses, except for Pittsburgh, have totally fallen off.
Yeah, you know, well, Cincinnati's come on a little bit in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, but I mean, he could throw. He's going to get in shootouts against Baltimore and Cincinnati. Like, he'll probably throw, if he was there, it's a lot of contract stuff to work out. He'll probably have like another Pro Bowl season.
I think you're forgetting there could be spots open for him, like San Francisco. I mean, what's going on?
I don't think so.
Well, but just we talked about the cult of Kirk, right?
Yeah.
And all the coaches who love his game. You're telling me if Brock Purdy, I know the elbow injury doesn't look like it's as serious as maybe we once thought, so that's great. So Brock Purdy doesn't look like he's going to miss any time. But you're telling me that Kirk might want to be a part of that San Francisco situation? Purdy's now gotten hurt 2 out of the 3 years he's been a QB.
Yeah.
I'd much rather be the backup to Purdy than be the starter in Cleveland.
I don't know if San Francisco would do that to Purdy. I think that'd be tough.
Well, Kirk would have to be the backup at 36 with the off the Achilles, and you got to pay Purdy so that he knows that he's the guy.
Yeah, I don't think San Francisco is going to do that. That would be controversial to bring in Kirk Cousins when like Brock Purdy's struggling really badly right now. Like that would be tough.
I've heard Sam Darnold to the 49ers. Sam Darnold would be worse.
Yeah, none of that's happening. Killer. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Tennessee, there's going to be other places. Jets.
Terrible.
Browns is also a terrible situation.
Not for him. This would be good. I'm telling you, I've watched him run Stefanski's offense. He knows it left and right. Like, this is the spot. And Njoku's amazing. I think this is the spot for him. I think that if he's there, he has a huge statistical season, as Kirk Cousins tends to do.
Well, anyone who thinks the Cleveland Browns are one Kirk Cousins away is delusional.
No. Kirk Cousins never won any of these spots. But, yeah, don't you think he could put up, like, a pretty decent season there?
Nope. No, I do not.
I think if you marry a healthy Kirk Cousins and Kevin Stefanski, you are going to get 4,400 yards and 28 touchdowns.
Meanwhile, there is a shot. Feels a little slim, but you never know. There's a shot that the Falcons get into the playoffs. Obviously, it wouldn't be Kirk Cousins. It'd be Michael Penix. Atlanta needs to win against Carolina this weekend, and then they need the Bucs to lose to the New Orleans Saints. I don't think anyone believes the Bucs will lose to the Saints, but because of the season sweep that they had over the Bucs, they're technically still alive.
And yeah, I mean,
just setting up a little Week 18.
Kind of like the Bengals are still alive.
Are still very alive.
Very as in, like, I saw their Super Bowl odds are like 1 in a million. It's very, you honestly think these backups are going to win these games?
So the Cincinnati Bengals, yes, they need a lot to go right. Number one, they've got to beat the Steelers. That's first and foremost. That happens on Saturday. They've got to beat the Steelers. Then
who might be playing for something? They might not be.
They might not be, depends. Because if the Ravens beat the Browns and they're a 20-point favorite, those Browns that you keep talking about, how awesome things are going over there. They're 20-point underdog to the Ravens, who can clinch the AFC North. Since he needs to beat Pittsburgh, they need the Broncos to lose to Kansas City, and they need the Dolphins to lose or tie the Jets.
Yeah, good luck. I mean, it's unlikely. Look at the odds.
And by the way, if Cincinnati, Denver, and Miami all lose, Denver gets in. We're talking about the last wild card spot in the AFC.
Listen, the Bengals are my Super Bowl team, so I desperately want to save that one out of nowhere. It ain't happening. It's just, how could Denver show up and lose to Carson Wentz?
Easily. Well, they're not going to show up. The game's in Denver. But it would be, listen, anytime you have a rookie quarterback, anything can happen. And I like Bo Nix a lot, but he turns the ball over.
So right now, the Cincinnati Bengals are 250-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Well, we're talking about just getting into the playoffs.
No, I know, but that's baked in that nobody thinks they're making the playoffs. It's going to be impossible. They get in the playoffs, watch out, but they're not getting in, Maggie. I'm sorry. I'm saying it declaratively.
Denver is a 10.5-point favorite over Carson Wentz. You don't think he's taking that personally? Future Jets quarterback Carson Wentz?
Good point.
Buckle up, BJ. All right, coming up next, the Minnesota Vikings and the Lions play.